Welcome to Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. I'm Jessie Lowry, Director of Conservation and Research here. And in the next half hour, we'll be talking to Kathy McKee from the zoo here about conservation principles and messages and teacher workshops and curriculum and our reach here at the zoo. Welcome to the show, Kathy.
Thank you.
I always like to start off the show by kind of laying the groundwork, talking just for a couple minutes about the role of modern zoos in saving animals in the wild. The mission of Blank Park Zoo is to inspire an appreciation of the natural world through conservation, education, research, and recreation. And basically, I like to see the zoo as a window to the wild, a place where we invite families and the community and school groups and retirement groups to come in through our gates, see some of the rarest animals on earth, get that sense of awe that we all get when we see these animals, but then turn that sense of awe into a real conservation action, something that's actually going to make a difference in our world. And that sometimes is kind of a leap. We've surveyed our audience, and most are young families with kids, and I have a young daughter myself, and I know how hard it is to be out and about and really be able to digest the signage and all of the messaging when you've got a lot of things going on. But what we're trying to do is really incite a conservation action, some kind of behavior change in your own life to help save animals and help take care of our environment. And so the zoo does work to save animals in many different ways. The first way is by being green, being as sustainable as possible in our daily operations here at Blank Park Zoo. And we do all of the normal things like recycling. We've also got LED lights. We've got some worms that eat some of our garbage. Some of our new construction, the ceiling is melted juice boxes. And so that's pretty cool. Another thing that we can do and that Blank Park Zoo does to save animals is taking care of our local environment. If you want to get the most bang for your buck, taking care of the local environment is the way to go. And we do things like a plant grow fly pollinator conservation project, which I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about with Kathy today. We encourage people to plant a native planting butterfly garden, whether it's a single pot on your back porch or an entire prairie restoration. We feel like everybody can do their part. We've got a project called Upcycle, where we remove invasive plant species from local parks like honeysuckle and mulberry. And it just so happens that those species are a favorite treat item of some of the critters here at Blank Park Zoo, like our giraffe and rhino. Really, the backbone of what a zoo can do to help save animals is to support those organizations and individuals out on the front lines, those field organizations that are in the range countries of many of the rare and endangered species that we have here at the zoo. We give about $70,000 per year to In the Wild conservation, and we send money across the globe, and from Namibia to support giraffe, to hornbills in Thailand, to lemurs and tortoises in Madagascar, and to the International Rhino Foundation that works to conserve rhinos in every country in which they exist. What we want to do is use the zoo as a tool. We've got an audience of 500,000 people a year. So coming through our gates, attending our programs, attending our teacher workshops. So how can we use this platform to help save animals in the wild? And I really want to pause and point out that the only way that we could do all these programs is with the support of the community, from people coming to our zoo, because a portion of all revenue made at Blank Park Zoo goes to save animals in the wild, goes to all of these programs. So that means when you come to the zoo as a young family with your children or as grandparents with your grandchildren, you're saving animals in the wild just by riding the train, just by grabbing a bite at the grill. If you choose to come to Zoo Brew or get married at the zoo, everything counts. And so I think that's really a neat story to really, tell the community how important they are to what we do here at Blank Park Zoo and across the world. So let's shift on over to our guest today, Kathy McKee. And Kathy, what is your official title here at the zoo?
My official title is K-12 Education Manager.
Okay.
I believe. So, okay. And in that capacity, I am in charge of designing and facilitating workshops for teachers and classroom programs for kindergarten through 12th graders.
I know that's one of the most robust departments here at the zoo. We do a ton of education statewide. But let's start out and talk about your background. How long have you been in Iowa? Where did you go to school, and what led you to the career that you have now?
I'm not an Iowa native. I was born in Chicago, but I have been in Iowa since I was about 12, and went to school here in Des Moines, and then I went to the University of Northern Iowa and got my teaching certificate, and I was an elementary teacher for many, many years. I have taught kindergarten through eighth grade. I ended my career in middle school science, and had I known I was going to love it so much, I would have started my career there, too, but that's where I was. From there, I went to the Department of Education, where I was the state science consultant for several years. And I also have taught science methods at Drake and Grandview.
That's an amazing background and tons of experience. And we'll talk about how to educate the different ages of kids here in just a few minutes. But I want to, when we do, I want to hear more about those middle schoolers, because I know that's a fun group to work with. Talk about your role here at the zoo.
As I said, I'm in charge of designing and implementing teacher workshops. We do 10 of those a year. The ones during the school year are held here at the zoo on weekends. We start Friday evening and run through the whole day Saturday. In the summer, we go out on the road. We go to Algona and Tiffin and Swan Lake and hold them at nature centers in those areas. And those are two full days. We have to have 15 contact hours in order to be able to provide recertification credit for teachers.
And about how many teachers attend each workshop?
Each workshop, we have around 30 to 35 teachers. And so with 10 a year, we're seeing 300 to 350 teachers a year.
And I've presented at a few of these teacher workshops, and everybody is excited and ready to have fun. And I know that a lot of the work that you do is really hands-on. And I've just had a wonderful experience. Every time I've encountered these teachers, I can tell they're really having fun at the workshops.
My philosophy of professional development is not to read PowerPoints and read articles and share and have carousels and what do you call gallery walks and all of the little things where you sit and passively gain information. In our workshops, the teachers are participating as if they were the students, and they are doing the activities as learners so that they can understand how to go back into their classrooms and have experienced what their children or their students will experience.
They can experience learning new things, and they can experience like their kids do what it feels like when you don't know about something.
Absolutely.
And when your peers are at the same table and they might get something faster than you get. And that's really a part of growing up, too.
It really is. And it's interesting to see the differences between teachers at elementary levels and high school levels, where the high school teachers are more comfortable with passive learning and lecturing, where the elementary aren't, but the elementary don't have the content knowledge. And so everybody gets to learn from everybody else. So,
well, I guess I'm an informal educator as well. I do lots of different talks about Blank Park Zoo's conservation efforts and especially our Plant Grow Fly program. And I definitely have more comfort level with adults, but I always go over to your cubicle and ask what I should do when I work with kids, because it's definitely a different ballgame. Mm-hmm.
It really is.
So let's go through the list. Tell us about one of your workshops, and let's just talk about each one of your workshops a little bit individually.
Okay. We have eight topics right now. We are working on another one that would help teachers understand the process of evolution without introducing the controversies, because that is part of the Next Generation Science Standards and part of the new Iowa Core. And so we are working on that now. It probably won't be out for another year, but the ones we do have in process right now, we do one on climate change, which looks at ocean currents and coral bleaching and water levels rising and the impacts it has on humans and animals. We have a conservation workshop where we look at the impact of people on animals and the relationship between people and animals and how we can work together to lessen the negative impacts and improve the positive ones. We especially look at snow leopards in Asia to talk about how we can work with the people there to protect the snow leopards.
I'll talk for just a minute about snow leopard trusts and what you're talking about. It's one of my favorite stories. That $70,000 that we give to the End of the Wild Conservation, all of our projects have a holistic view of conservation. They take in consideration an individual animal, animal populations, the environment, and the local people. because many of these areas with rare animals are also places of crushing human poverty. And the reason for the decrease in animal populations with that poverty is folks just trying to eke out a living to feed their family. And we all know that if we had to, take out a rare animal to feed our family, that we would all do that. And so we can't be pointing fingers. And snow leopard trust goes into areas where snow leopards exist around, like in Mongolia, and they work with the local people, and they enter into a contract and say, if nobody from your village poaches a snow leopard all year, then we will in turn sell your handmade goods on a global market. And so that gives the folks there a sustainable livelihood and a reason to help protect the snow leopards and a way to feed their family. And it just, everybody wins. Mm-hmm. And there was some good news lately with snow leopards that they have been downlisted from endangered. And so Tom McCarthy of Panthera is a very good friend of mine, and he was the one behind the IUCN numbers. And so I know they're correct. And so it's nice to pause for a moment and celebrate that success, that snow leopards are more prevalent than we previous thought. We've been funding Snow Leopard Trust for 20 years.
Wow. And we do get a lot of our information from them. We actually do a role-playing situation during the workshop where we have everyone from the villagers to the park service to middle school kids in America and hunters, and each of them has to present their point of view, and it gets rather raucous at times, but it's quite fun. We also, during that one, look at local animals like prairie chickens as well. So we're looking at local and regional and international animal protection.
I bet Snow Leopard Trust would love to know that we're doing that. So we'll have to talk later about that.
We will have to do that. Yeah.
Tell us about some more workshops.
Okay. We do one on pollinators, which originated when you started working on Plant Grow Fly. And we look at all of the different kinds of pollinators. We often think of bees and butterflies, but a lot of people don't know that lemurs and mosquitoes are also pollinators. And so we look at the things that they pollinate and the benefits. We actually do dinner the first night or during the lunch, if we do it in the summertime, where our lunch is only food that is not pollinated by animals, and they end up eating corn and olives, and that's about it. But then we also feed them later to show them the impact of what pollinators do for us.
So I've heard you tell this story. You just nonchalantly say, by the way, it's a non-pollinated lunch. And the teachers will go out into the hall with their plates and hungry tummies and
yes.
find nothing but a
find
few
that.
Items.
Right, right.
And then everybody mills around confused for a few minutes, and then you...
And then we take them to another room and give them their actual lunch or dinner. So, but it is very impactful. It gives a good message to let us know that we depend on many, many animals to pollinate our food.
Most people have no idea the amount of resources that we get from pollinators and what they mean to our everyday lives. For kids, I often do a pollinator pizza activity where we give them, a little picture of a crust and a whole bunch of ingredients, and they make their favorite pizza. And then I proceed to burst their bubble, and we have to take almost everything off because it needs insects to pollinate.
Yep. So we also do a patterns workshop where we look at animal camouflage or warning colors or migration patterns. We do whale sound patterns, and it really is a lot of fun. We do a lot of things with that. We do habitats and adaptations where we're looking at animals from different habitats and the adaptations they have to survive in those habitats. We do a water wonders where we look a lot at water conservation. We start with the physical properties of water and then move to what we can do to conserve waterways and watersheds and things like that.
These all sound like you're really equipping the teachers, to teach the students about things that are currently happening in our world and things that the kids can really make a difference in.
Mm-hmm.
We can all stand up for clean water and help, test the water in our area. And it's something that a lot of kids, are really dealing with right now, whether they're urban kids or rural kids.
Right.
Everybody's dealing with that. And, when you talked about the water and the whale sounds, I've got a couple memories from my middle school years where something just kind of clicked with me that I'll never forget. And I'm sure that whale sounds, doing a project with whale sounds, it sounds exactly like something like that, that would really make an impression on kids. And what it's all about is creating conservationists,
mm-hmm.
And instilling that conservation ethic in kids, which... Mm-hmm. I mean, these all sound wonderful. I want to take them now.
I do have what we call our groupies. We have teachers who have taken all of the workshops and beg us for more. And a lot of times they will come and visit here at the zoo if they're visiting, or they'll send me pictures of what they've done in their classroom based on what we've learned in the workshops. And it really is fun to see what they're doing.
I bet it's so rewarding for you to see the fruits of your efforts, mm-hmm. and to see, I mean, it getting really a picture is. Back of kids enjoying something that you're doing for them mm-hmm. is just wonderful.
Yes, it really is. And another thing that really excites me is if we have new people at a workshop, and I check my email on my way home, and I have some of the brand new people who've never attended a workshop registering for the next two workshops. So it really is fun to know that we're providing something that they value and that they can use.
That's great. And that you travel so far away from the zoo to make it accessible for people all around the state.
Yes,
I mean,
do.
That's really important that we can bring the zoo to you.
Yes. If a teacher attends a workshop, they get a free classroom program. If they can bring a field trip to the zoo, we do it here. If not, we travel to their classroom to do a program for them. So
that's fantastic.
We have a couple of other topics. We have a few new topics. We just finished recently one on ecosystems where the participants build sustainable ecosystems in bottles. And we have a couple of them that are going on their second year now, where we have microorganisms and things that are continually surviving in their 2-liter bottles.
Please tell us more about that, actually. That sounds very interesting.
Actually, I have a teacher from Johnston who has done this in her classroom, Johnston High School, Kyla Burns. She helps us with this one. She does it in her classroom, and we gather multitudes of 2-liter soda bottles, and we start them by talking about what is in an ecosystem, the components of an ecosystem, producers, consumers, and so on. We do a tour around the zoo looking for producers and consumers, and then we go out to a local lake, and we gather algae and plants and little insects that live in the water, and we build an ecosystem we also talk about carbon, nitrogen, and hydrogen cycles. And in their ecosystems, those cycles are working. And so it really is pretty exciting. They have a good time with that one.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. Another unforgettable project for the kids in the class.
We do draw the line. We had a group that wanted to put a frog in their ecosystem, and we had to convince them that the frog was not going to be sustainable, and we had taken back to the pond. but most of the other creatures and microbes and things are sustainable for a long period of time.
That's really neat.
Our other new one is biomimicry, where we are looking at we are looking at engineering, because that's another big part of the Iowa Core and the Next Generation Science Standards, and using animals and their adaptations to design things to help solve human problems. And we all know about Velcro and burrs that are in your pants, but they also are doing things like making bras out of that emulate gecko feet, band-aids that are based on shark skin, and many, many, many other things. There's a train in Japan that is patterned after a kingfisher beak, because as the train goes through a tunnel, the air pressure will change, and there's a boom as it comes out of the tunnel. And so they studied kingfishers who dive into the water and change from air pressure to the water pressure, and they designed the train so that it wouldn't have that effect as it came out of the tunnel based on the bird. And so they all have the opportunity to design. So they choose a problem that they want to solve and use an animal to solve that problem.
And that sounds extremely fun.
It really is fun. And then our other one is on genetics. And we do that one here at the zoo, and we look at the macaques, our snow monkeys, and our goat population. And we do some genetic family tree kind of things. We learn about chromosomes and DNA and genetic traits that are passed down for many generations. And it's something that's very difficult for teachers to teach because it's rather abstract. And so we get down to the basics of it, and we do pipe cleaner genomes and things like that. And even our elementary teachers say that they have learned a lot about things that they didn't know from that.
And so. You passed me one of those worksheets a few weeks ago with the mm-hmm. with the macaque family tree.
That's right.
And it was a little hard for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so
yes.
Also that's another memorable experience is when you fail at something.
Yes, absolutely.
But we've also got a sweet little baby macaque right now mm-hmm. that will help in some of those educational opportunities too.
She's going to take a big place in our macaque family tree.
Good. Wonderful. Well, I think all those workshops sound really exciting. Talk about the impact of these workshops, you know, how far in the state and how many kids do you think? And you've already talked about the emails and the pictures that you get back, but how many kids do you think are impacted by this?
We think we impact tens of thousands of kids throughout the year with 350 teachers coming. And granted, some of those are repeats, but they're getting new contacts, so our new content. But we think we impact tens of thousands of kids throughout the year with the teachers that attend our workshops. And in attending a workshop, they do gain content knowledge on topics that they may not feel comfortable in, but they also gain pedagogy. We do inquiry-based, learning cycle-based activities so that they are more student-centered and the teachers can take it back and have the students be more responsible for their learning, which is something that some teachers are not comfortable with either. And so they gain some confidence in allowing their kids to take control of their learning.
And at the same time, creating those connections to the natural world, creating those connections to animals, and something that the kids will never forget. And I think that's probably what got all of us on this path was that connection with animals, whether it's our family dog or or something that we saw in a zoo when we were younger. Let's talk a little bit about the classroom programs and how you're tailoring those to the new standards.
Yes, we're working on that right now. The new standards are grade level based, so there are specific ones for first grade and fifth grade and middle school. And so we are looking at the content and the performance expectations in each grade level, and we are designing our programs for our classrooms to meet those. And so, for instance, in kindergarten, where they look at needs of animals, we will take a specific group of animals and we'll have the kids tell us what they think that animal eats and where it might live so that they can get the idea that those needs are met in a habitat. So we're not finished yet. We have a kind of an outline, but we have to flesh it out a little bit, but it should be done in the next few months as well.
Well, we all know what a great influence teachers have on kids and that the teachers are overtaxed and they don't have enough time to, you know, do the much as planning as they want to do. And so if folks like you, professional educators, can take some of the guesswork out of that and prepare things for them, how wonderful is that?
And it also, they have a lot of standards to meet. And so this will help them have the opportunity to meet one or two of them without having to spend a week on a unit or something like that. So we're trying to make it as easy as we can for teachers because they have a lot on their plates. So
let's talk a little bit about how educating and messaging about conservation and saving animals is different with kids than it is with adults.
I think we need to be a lot more positive with kids. We can't do doom and gloom with kids because then they worry about that there's nothing I can ever do that's going to change anything. So we look at doing things that they can do, like don't use paper bag or plastic bags, and recycle what you can, and see if you can have an impact that way. Do things at a local level that they feel like they can actually see a result from. And as you mentioned, coming to the zoo and helping them understand that every time they come to the zoo, they are actually helping maybe a rhinoceros someplace or something like that. So making it relatable to them, making it something that they can feel that they're having an impact rather than talking about how things are terrible and you know, polar bears are dying and things like that. That they don't need to hear that kind of thing. They need to hear that we're doing good things.
And it really is true. I mean, it really is true that anybody in any age can do what they can. We can't all have an electric car right now.
That's right.
We can't all volunteer to help save the polar bears and their natural habitat. But we can all stop using straws.
That's right. Yep.
And we can all use reusable bags, and we can all volunteer, and we can all plant a couple native plants, which are extremely important to all the native animals here in the zoo. And so that's really, I think, important to all the programs that we do, is everybody can just do their part. And I like to say, don't let perfect be the enemy of good. That good is just fine.
That's right.
Especially when you're learning and when you're a little kid. I remember when I was maybe in fifth or sixth grade, and those little flyers that you could order books out of, those colorful flyers, and my daughter gets them in preschool now, that when they passed them out, you just couldn't wait to look through them. And I found a book called 50 Things You Can Do to Save the Earth.
I have that book.
And I still have it too. And that was something that just really worked for me because I looked through it and it was little things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just recycle and do this and do that. And it really meant a lot to me. So what inspired you to be a conservationist, Kathy?
I had a wonderful childhood, I think, that I had a father and a grandfather that took me out on the river. We were outside all the time. We'd walk in the woods and they would go, "Oh, look, a snake. How cool." So I never learned that snakes were scary, that they were cool. My mother, who doesn't really care for crawly things, one of my most vivid memories is we had a big hickory tree in my yard when I was little. And it was the summer of the 17-year cicadas. And she sat out on the table and showed us the little W's in their wings and talked to us about that. And she doesn't even like things like that. And so I was really fortunate that my parents and my grandparents encouraged me to be outside and learn about things in the world, even creepy crawly things that other people don't like. And so I feel very fortunate. I spent a lot of time outside and I gained a love of animals. We always had dogs. And so things like that were important to me.
We've only just got a couple minutes left. I think the time kind of got away from us. We were having such a good time. Let's go through a couple more things. What's the one behavior change or conservation action you would recommend that families do?
The one that speaks to me the most is using fewer things that can harm the earth. Like, don't use plastic bags and don't use straws and things like that. You can use reusables. You can drink out of a glass. Things that can't be broken down, things that can't be, they don't ever go away and they end up in the oceans and things like that. So that would be my big one. Cut down our use on things that cannot be recycled and reused and things like that. Get outside and learn about what it's like to be outside. Learn about the plants and animals that surround you. Learn about your habitat. And that will encourage you to learn about other habitats.
Thank you.
Education is a big thing.
Thank you, Kathy, for all the work that you do to save animals and to educate children and teachers throughout the state of Iowa. You are making a huge impact. Thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you.
You can find all about the teacher workshops at Blank Park Zoo at blankparkzoo.com. And Blank Park Zoo is open year-round. You can learn about the zoo, including information about our animals, special events, previous episodes of this show, and more on our website, blankparkzoo.com. And make sure you check out the zoo's YouTube channel and Facebook pages for updates. Please make sure to join us next time on Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo.